I'm just delighted to be here. This is Will Tuttle with the June 20th, 2014 World Peace Diet Facilitator Training. And this is the Circle, of course, which is open to people in the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training Master Program and anyone who wants to be part of the Circle, actually, who's been seriously involved with the World Peace Diet. So we are thrilled, actually, to be able to talk to you today about this film that we went to last night, which is called Cowspiracy. It's amazing. It was really wonderful to see that there's such an enormous talent, actually, among us. Kip Anderson is a World Peace Diet facilitator. He went through the training, I think, about 2 years ago, and has created this with a friend, Keegan Kuhn. Kip is from San Francisco. Keegan is, I think, from Oakland. And this film, Cowspiracy, we went to the world premiere last night. And I have to say, it was really well attended. It was pretty much packed. It's not a large theater, of course, although there was another theater, I guess another showing beforehand, that was also well attended. I'm not sure if it was sold out or not. And that was kind of a preview for the press, actually, but they allowed some of our friends to go that couldn't make it into the later one. So anyway, I'll talk a little bit more about this event in a few minutes, but basically I'd like to really just take my hat off to Kip and to Keegan for finally making a documentary that I think that really does a great job of showing how animal agriculture is the primary force devastating our planet. And it's a movie, I think, that will really reach a lot of people because it just tells Kip's story, you know, and you can't really argue with someone's story. And it's done with a lot of humor and humility and quite shocking in some cases the way that the industry is blocking even the Sierra Club and especially Greenpeace from speaking at all about animal agriculture. It was fascinating to see. So anyway, thank you all for joining us on the call here this evening. We appreciate your flexibility. This is supposed to be on the third Thursday, obviously, of every month, as we know. This is on the third Thursday, the day after the third Thursday, on Friday, June 20th. And I'd like to begin our call, as we normally do, with taking a moment and just centering. So let's do that. That'll be good for me, because actually just exactly at the moment when I was ready to start this call, somebody called in on this other line and sort of distracted everything. So I had to kind of take care of that. But let's take a moment, and wherever you are, if it's convenient for you, let's turn our attention within for a moment and remember why we are here, why we are on this call. The feeling in our hearts of caring for animals, caring for the earth, caring for ourselves and our loved ones, caring for the future generations of life on this planet, caring for the downtrodden and the oppressed, caring for those who are blinded by self-ambition, for those who are wounded by the violence of our herding culture being raised here. And let's call forth from our hearts a feeling of kindness and compassion for all living beings. And just let's send that forth into the world as a ever-expanding sphere of white light from our heart going forth to bless all living beings, knowing that we are part of an awakening on this planet of human consciousness, questioning the ways that we have been doing things for the last 8 or 10,000 years on a deep level, and realizing that it is time for a benevolent revolution. And we are the pioneers many ways of this revolution. We've been called for some reason to help bring this message to the world by living this message of kindness and compassion and radical inclusion. And we give thanks for everyone who's not on this call, who's part of this movement. I know there's many, many people who have a similar feeling and yearning and who are doing wonderful work, not only in visible ways, maybe writing books or working in organizations, but many in completely invisible ways as well, helping animals and helping other human beings in ways that help us all to evolve and to have a beautiful life on this planet. These are the unsung heroes that I think really make up a much larger number of people than we realize. They're ignored by the mass media typically. So we give thanks for this whole web of compassion, for the interconnected web of life on this earth, for this precious opportunity that we have of a human life, brief as it is, that we can serve a cause of kindness and justice and compassion, joy and freedom and healing. So grateful for all of you. I'm so grateful for this opportunity that we have to be together here on this call. So it is. Okay, so now, as everyone knows, this is your time, really. This is just your time to engage in the ideas in the World Peace Diet and really in the ideas of veganism coined by Donald Watson back in 1944, a philosophy and way of life which seeks to exclude as far as possible and practical all forms of exploitation of and cruelty to animals and humans for any reason, for any type of exploitation and oppression, for food, clothing, or any reason. And so really, I think also I should mention the idea of ahimsa, which is usually translated as nonviolence, the core of all the world religions. I think a better translation might be loving kindness and conscious love and awareness. So if you would like to ask a question or make a comment at any time, you are free to do that. Press *6 on your phone. We have that feature is now up and running. And as I said, we don't have a special guest here on this call this month, as we sometimes do. And I do it less now because I want to really make sure that anyone who's part of the circle has an opportunity to either express your questions or concerns you may have, or any wonderful successes you've had, or whatever it is, or any realizations. Because I think this is an opportunity for us to build community, which is always so helpful. So, since the last month, there's a few things that have happened. Last night was very fresh in my mind, since Madeline and I were at this time just basically getting ready and going into the opening world premiere of this new movie called Cowspiracy. And I had never seen it. No, I don't think anybody really had ever seen it. And it's a good, I think, 90-minute film. It's a documentary. I was never bored. It's really fast-paced. And it keeps your attention, for me anyway, because I'm interested in these things. But I think even the average person would have a hard time getting bored, because it's kind of like a detective movie in a way, the way Kip does it. And Kip and Keegan, I should say, really, they both did this together. But it basically starts out it's about Kip. You never see Keegan at all, but it's about Kip. As I said, he's a World Peace Diet facilitator. It's so funny because when I met him a few years ago at a World Peace Diet facilitator training that we put on in Cincinnati, he told me he lived in San Francisco. He was there with his girlfriend, and he said he was making videos, and he told me he would love to make a video of the World Peace Diet. And I thought that would be great, because I'm still actually hoping to have a video of the World Peace Diet, a real documentary film, actually, based on the World Peace Diet. And there are several possibilities right now, but nothing is actually emerging. But anyway, he's one of them, and he said that he would just definitely want to do it. He just has a small project that he's going to get out of the way. That should only take maybe 6 months to or 9 months or so, and then he would get on it. So it turns out that small project he was talking about was this movie Cowspiracy. And it turned out to be quite a large scale, obviously, huge production. And it's really great to see, he did the, you're probably all aware of it, but he did, along with, right at the same time, we launched on the same day, which was Earth Day, the World Peace Diet, the Circles of Compassion book that I'm the editor, I'm just the editor of this book. So it's not really my book, but it was, we did an Indiegogo campaign. It wasn't my idea to do that. It was really the publisher, a small publisher, called Vegan Publishers in Massachusetts, and so they said they needed to do a crowdfunding campaign to raise some money to print the book, and they asked me to sort of head the whole thing up, and I thought it's really a good project. It's a book that's focused, as I think you're all aware, on the intersections between violence towards animals and violence towards humans, and the whole range of different human justice issues, social justice issues that we have, and how, if you go deeply into them, you will find very much a deep connection with violence towards animals for food, even though that's not usually understood by most people. So it's really, I think, an important book, and I'm glad that we were able to be successful in our crowdfunding campaign, and it's moving forward. And if anyone has any questions about that, I'd be happy to talk about it. But anyway, as I was saying, at the same time, that same very same day, just by chance, Kip and Keegan with Cowspiracy launched their crowdfunding campaign as well. And they were extremely successful in their crowdfunding campaign. They raised twice as much, as more than twice as much as they were hoping, over $100,000. So, which is great, because now they're able, apparently, to dub and what do you call it? The words underneath there, on the film in many languages and get a distribution in many different countries. They have a budget for doing that. So anyway, but this was the world premiere, and they were very successful. We were kind of contributing to each other's campaigns and helping each other out all the way along. And so I was so curious to actually be able to see this film finally. And last night I was there. And actually, Richard Openlander, who some of you may be aware of, he's a wonderful person. He flew in, actually, all the way from Kalamazoo, Michigan, just to be at the showing here with his wife, Jill. It was so funny. She's they run a sanctuary. They have cows, pigs, not a lot, but, it's like 8 or 10 pigs and 3 or 4 cows and some chickens and other animals, an animal sanctuary in Kalamazoo, and that's basically what she does. And so she said she was kind of all dressed up, and she laughed. She said she had a manicure and a pedigree and got clothes that she'd never, would never wear, and she was kind of all looking great, kind of dressed up. And but she said normally she doesn't look anything like this, and she never leaves the sanctuary. She's always slopping the hogs and baling hay or whatever, just trying to keep the animals happy. And she says she gets very little help from local vegan activists, because most of them, which I understand, are more vegan activists and not so much wanting to get their hands dirty with working on a sanctuary. So he was there. They were both there. And it was kind of ironic, because Kip, of course, was completely the opposite. He was in his kind of very casual clothes with his ubiquitous baseball cap that he seems to always wear on. And but anyway, Richard and I, after the film was over, they asked us to come to the front and answer questions. John Robbins was supposed to also be there to answer questions and to make comments on the film. But he sent me an email that he wouldn't be able to come, and also, of course, told them he was sorry he wasn't able to make it, although he is not in the film, actually, at all. So I was surprised that they even asked him to be there. But But the film had Howard Lyman played a pretty big role, I would say. Most of you know Howard Lyman, the mad cowboy who now lives up in Washington State. He's retired from animal advocacy, although actually I shouldn't say that. He's still doing some. But he was very, very active going, I don't know what, he said a couple hundred thousand miles a year, traveling, giving lectures. He's a former rancher, dairy feedlot operator from Montana, and he had some great scenes in the movie, too. But basically, just briefly, I'll just tell you what it is, and I encourage you to get a copy if you can, and I think it's going to be ready, I think, as a DVD before too long, or as a download even sooner. I think it's a great way to raise awareness about the violence towards animals, especially towards the environment. It really focuses on the environment. And just briefly, the plot line is that Kip is a regular guy. You know, he's raised in the society, eating the usual meals, but just loves the outdoors. And so when he sees Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth, he gets really inspired to be part of that movement, and he takes it to the limit. He changes all his light bulbs. He takes really short showers, and he does whatever he can to ensure that he has a tiny footprint. But then someone sends him a link, and he shows it to the United Nations study that actually animal agriculture is much worse than all forms of transportation. He rides his bike everywhere. He uses a car, all this to help fight global warming. And he's shocked, and he thinks, well, why doesn't anyone talk about animal agriculture if that's the worst thing? And so he decides to make some phone calls to the government, and it's very interesting. He gets into the state in Sacramento and talks to the Department of Water, and they say all the kinds of things you can do to save water and so forth, and he says, I hear that animal agriculture actually uses a lot more water than, anything else. What about that? And it's just so funny to watch, to see these people's faces. That's what really makes this movie great, is he asks these straight-out questions about, well, what about animal agriculture? And just to see the look on their face when he asks that question, and how they just sit, they're very articulate, before that. And as soon as he says that, they start hemming and hawing and delaying and trying to start, they don't know what to say. They look up at the ceiling. They say, well, what does that have to do with it? I don't know about that. So, and then finally, he gets the fellow to admit that there's very powerful political forces at work here, that you just don't question that kind of stuff, And so then he goes to the different, to the headquarters of Sierra Club and to the headquarters of Rainforest Action Network, and Greenpeace is the worst. Greenpeace will not even let him in the door. They're just absolutely, completely, it's really funny. I mean, it's just when you see how defensive and how they're just afraid they are to talk about animal agriculture as having any part of this, and yet they say they're experts, they're really so much on board with trying to save the environment, save rainforests, save the oceans, stop global warming and all these things. And yet, he does a really good job with science and graphs. It's great graphics, actually, in the movie that make it very obvious to anyone who's watching this that animal agriculture is such a way huger, devastating force on this planet than anything else. And then he'll go and talk to these the top people, the executive directors and so forth, and how they'll just not talk about it. He'll say, well, why don't you talk about animal agriculture then? Isn't that, or he'll go to the Rainforest Action Network and these other people, well, what is the biggest single cause of cutting down the rainforest? And they just they say, well, there's a lot of different reasons people cut down the rainforest. I mean, there's a variety of different drivers. And they won't, either they don't know or that effect. But one woman actually comes right out and says, with one of the organizations, that people have gotten killed for making these connections and for trying to save the rainforest from the ranchers. But she says, finally, yeah, well, actually, animal agriculture is the biggest, but we don't want to talk about that. And so he gets really afraid, basically, and Howard Lyman kind of scares him too and says, you know, you'll you don't know, you may be, if you make this film, you know, your neck will be on the chopping block, you know, that kind of thing. And so then he says, okay, I'm not going to make this film, you know, I just can't do it. I don't want to be going through what I'll probably go through if I make this film. And but then, you know, he has a change of heart and, of course, makes the film. And it's just enormously educational in terms of the environment and how the meat lobby and the environmental lobby don't address this. I mean, how they actually, in a way, perhaps work together not to address it. He also goes to free-range operations, organic dairy, small-range, backyard farming things. And so actually there is one scene, I'll just tell you ahead of time, there is one scene where this fellow who just has a few ducks, you know, he's a backyard farmer with his kids, and he has some ducks, he has maybe 20 ducks, and he actually holds the duck down and has a hatchet and kills the duck, and that's the only real, violence in the movie, but it visibly upsets Kip. Kip later talks about how, wow, he has tears, really, about that, you know, about what happened to this poor duck. And so the movie really does include, I think, a good animal compassion. It's not just environmental. And so anyway, it's great. Michael Clapper, the doctor, and he's really funny. Everybody was laughing when he was talking about, he wouldn't call milk milk. He called it bovine growth fluid or something like that. Why is anyone eating bovine growth fluid? And he kept calling it that. It became very funny after a while. So it's a great movie, I think, to share not only with vegans to help clarify our understanding of the issues, but with non-vegans, because he just tells his story in a very casual, honest way, and I think really does a great service to the movement. So, people have asked me in the past, well, is there a good movie that talks about veganism, animal agriculture, and global warming, or the cutting down the rainforest, or the destruction of the oceans? And there haven't been any, really. I mean, there have not been any. It's a huge gap. And he has some great footage about fish. That's the other thing I love, because the fishing industry is so cruel and violent and devastating. And this movie really has some great stuff on the devastation of the oceans and fish as sentient beings and the cruelty to fish and so forth. So it's a lot to get into a relatively short amount of time to do it as a interesting story, but I think he does a great job. So we really enjoyed that, and last night we were able to, after the movie was over, talk a little bit and encourage people. I was able to encourage people to take this message out to the world, and they're now embarking on a showing tour of the movie. And he sent me a schedule. I can put the schedule up maybe if you're interested. First is a West Coast tour. In a week from today, they're going to be having the Los Angeles premiere. That'll be the second time it's shown in Los Angeles. So if anyone's in the LA area and you'd like to go, tell me, because I can get you in. And then it's going to be in a bunch of other cities in the Southwest, and then coming up through Denver, and then up through Vancouver, and then coming down through Seattle and Portland, and then later there'll be a whole showing tour on the rest of the United States, and then also in Europe, and then also in the rest of the world. They want to show it everywhere, and I think it's a real chance to help promote this message. And so if anyone would like to put on a show, and they asked me actually if I know anyone in a certain area who would like to put on a showing, to let them know, because you can put on a showing of the film if you'd like, and they'll help you with that. And I think it's great. You know, I'm in the film quite a bit actually, and which was nice. Madeline and I, just exactly 1 year ago in June of 2013. We were in San Francisco. I was leading a three-day veganism and meditation retreat at the Shivananda Yoga Ashram by Golden Gate Park, and they came over one afternoon and just shot a bunch of footage of me in this upstairs meditation room, and so they used some of it. I mean, you know, it was a lot more they didn't, but you know how it is. They just use what they can. So I think it does have quite a good World Peace Diet message. You know, it's a book that was, you know, made by World Peace Diet facilitator. So I feel really good about all this happening and us kind of working together if we can to help Kip get this movie out to more people. So let me know if you'd like to know more about this. All right, that's all I'm going to say about that, I think, right now. And there's one other thing I wanted to mention that's kind of in relationship to that, which is that about a month ago, I guess, or a little less, maybe 3 weeks, I can't remember exactly, there was somebody in Portland, Oregon, actually, asked if there's a World Peace Diet facilitator in Portland, because they're at a Unitarian church and they would like to have a World Peace Diet facilitator come to their church and lead a World Peace Diet study group at their church. And you know, this is not the first time this has happened. This has happened a few times before, and I realize that we're not very well organized that way. You know, people sign up for the World Peace Diet facilitator training typically, put in their name and email address and do the whole thing, and there really never is any kind of questionnaire about where are you located? Would you like to be part of a database, basically, where we know where people are? So if there's people, say, in wherever in Des Moines, Iowa, who would like to have a World Peace Diet facilitator, we can say, oh yeah, we have somebody there, and or coaching or anything like that. So I was thinking Tara has been helping a little bit with this, and there's going to be a new website. WorldPeaceDiet.org is the main website now, but that's going to be changing over. I've been so busy I haven't really worked on it enough, but it's going to be changing over to WorldPeaceDiet.com. But don't worry, you can always use WorldPeaceDiet.org. It'll lead people right to that WorldPeaceDiet.com site. But we'd like to have a page there where anyone who would like to be listed publicly, and that you're a World Peace Diet facilitator and where you are, just perhaps your location, then we can perhaps have a form people can fill out and contact you. And so we want to put something like that together. And so if any of you would be willing to help out with that in any way, like volunteer a little bit to just help compile that, that would be great. I think it would really be a service to the movement to have something like that available to people, and we could then let people know that we have people in, you know, we have people all over the place, but we just don't know exactly. It's not systematized very well. So again, be in touch with me if you have any interest in helping out with that. That would be great. And so now that's pretty much what I wanted to mention about yesterday and that matter. And I'd like to maybe say a couple more things that are on my mind before we open it up. But I will say this, it's open right now. If anyone has any comments or questions about anything I've been saying so far, go ahead and feel free to hit *6, and I'll be happy to honor your request, and we can have a discussion. Or if you have any other questions in general, please do feel free to use this time. This is really what it's all about. So the other thing I wanted to mention is that we also recently, I guess just a week and a half ago or so, we were in Las Vegas, and we, on the way to Las Vegas, we drove from where we are in Northern California down first across to Chico, California, and gave a lecture there, and then several other lectures, and one the next day, a second one there in Chico, and then Sacramento, and then Modesto, and then Fresno, and then down to Las Vegas. And it was the one in Chico I wanted to talk a little bit about, because I think it's very instructive in some ways. You know, we've been desiring, in a sense, to be able to bring the message of compassion for all life to the Buddhist community, you know, in the world, in the United States, and in the world. And it's very odd. You know, it's kind of like a similar experience that Kip had with the environmental groups. You know, you would think that they would just embrace this with open arms. You know, that's what he said. You know, it's like, well, animal agriculture is by far the greatest contributor to the destruction of the rainforest, then why aren't you, who are protecting the rainforest, talking to people about the importance of reducing eating meat? You know, I mean, why don't you embrace this message with open arms and really talk about it, you know? And they just to see their faces when he asked these questions. And it's the same thing, and I've seen it myself. I've only once in the last 10 years been able to speak at an environmental organization. It was a Sierra Club. It was set up in Kansas, I think, and Judy Carmen helped. And, and Beth Redwood, I think. And actually some good things came out of that. I think Judy and first Beth and now Judy write a monthly column in the Sierra Club newspaper there, and so they get the vegan word in because there's, you know, the one guy on the board was kind of interested and open to it. But in general, they just do not want to hear it. And so I'm having the same problem with the Buddhist groups. I told you, I think, about the experience I had being in Taiwan, where the Buddhists there were totally open and receptive and promoted the vegan message. But when I went to Perth, Australia, and the students of the Vipassana Center there asked me to please speak at their center, and how the teacher, who was from England, and studied with Achan Cha, who's the greatest of all the teachers in the forest tradition of Vipassana Buddhism in Thailand, refused to let me come and speak there. Well, anyway, so there's a center in Chico called the Sky Creek Dharma Center, which has, it's kind of an interesting thing. It has many Buddhist groups meeting there. On Monday night, every Monday night, they have a Vipassana meditation group. Every Tuesday night, they have, I think it's a Tibetan Buddhist meditation group. On every Wednesday night, they have a Thich Nhat Hanh sitting group. And every Thursday night, they have a Japanese, it's Kennet Roshi, the Japanese Zen meditation group. And every Friday night, they have a Taoist sort of meditation, Qigong, Tai Chi group. So all these groups work together and were able to rent and then eventually buy this beautiful center, actually. It's very nice. And use it cooperatively. And so this one woman asked me if I could please come and give a lecture on the World Peace Diet at the Sky Creek Dharma Center, and she would invite all the different groups and all the groups, put it up there and put it on their newsletters and just get everybody to come, all these different types of Buddhists to come to hear about the World Peace Diet and veganism. And we even decided that there would be a Friday night lecture and then a Saturday morning workshop. You know, so we had two events. So what happened? This is so interesting. So we got there and for the Friday night lecture, and it turned out that not one person came from any tradition except, does anyone know which one? You can make a guess. There was only one out of the five traditions had anyone come. And that was, I'll just answer the question myself, was the Thich Nhat Hanh Sangha that they have. They call it the slowly ripening Sangha, I think, or something. But anyway, they came, and, you know, they had a pretty good turnout. It wasn't huge. It was only probably 10 or 15 people, actually, or maybe something like that. But we had a great time in both days, and they were very nice and very generous, actually. So it was interesting, but I couldn't help but wonder aloud with them, you know, why did not one person from the Tibetan, the Vipassana, the Japanese Zen, the Taoist groups show up for this? You know, there wasn't any interest, or perhaps they're not ready. The first precept is not to kill, and unlike in the Judeo-Christian tradition of the Ten Commandments, where there's some argument actually about whether the Ten Commandments not to kill means only humans or whether it means animals. But anyway, there's absolutely no argument in the Buddhist tradition that it for sure refers explicitly to all living beings. And explicitly in the tradition, one should minimize violence to other living beings, not just humans. And yet, again, we find the same thing. There's this enormous embarrassment. And somebody asked me that last night, actually, at the after the movie was over. One of the questions from the audience was, why is it when, if I'm just eating total junk food, nothing healthy at all, just Twinkies maybe and Coke, no one ever says anything about my nutrition. But if I say I'm a vegan, they say, well, where are you going to get your protein? And where are you going to get your different things? And why are they suddenly nutrition experts and worried about my health? And so I said, you know, she said, why are people so afraid of this? And what is the reason that there's such resistance and fear? And this is really the, you know, the $64,000 question, in the sense that the World Peace Diet was written in a sense to address, to understand the big picture of our society, culture, and the very powerful, not just the financial and corporate and, you know, those kind of forces that are at work here that promote animal agriculture, and the cultural forces at work promoting animal agriculture, but the internal emotional and psychological forces that promote animal agriculture within our own minds and bodies. And so, you know, this basically is the question. And through the reading of the World Peace Diet, I think, and through our discussions, we can try to get more in-depth understanding of this. But one of the points, what I mentioned to her last night, which I think it's always good to remind ourselves of this, is in the very last chapter of the World Peace Diet, in chapter 15, I talk a little bit about the fact that there are always three roles enacted in any publicly committed crime or attack. For example, a robbery or a mugging or something. There's the role of the perpetrator, the role of the victim, and then there's the role of the witness or the bystander, and how the victims are victims. Basically, they're getting attacked. The perpetrator is not only the one who's instigating and carrying out the violence, but in a sense, he is also, or she is also, a victim. On some level, people do not just commit violence on others and steal from them or harm them unless they've been wounded in some way and are acting out from that woundedness. So this is a devastating thing that's happening. There's the victim is hoping that the bystander will intervene in some way effectively and stop the violence from going on. Will perhaps be able to talk to the perpetrator or scare them off or reason with them or get the police or who knows what, but something to relieve the situation. So they're caught in a dance, in a sense, of violence and of domination. And really, they don't have, in those roles, very much power at all. However, the bystander has enormous power. The bystander, actually, the witness of this whole thing, it's really up to that person to act skillfully in order to help heal this and to stop this from happening. And that's the situation we find ourselves in today, where we have just literally hundreds of millions of people in the United States, for example, billions worldwide, who are perpetrators. We have, of course, tens of billions, and goodness knows how many more, billions, hundreds of billions, trillions probably, of non-human animals who are being killed and horribly treated for food and other products through animal agriculture, and the domination of animals for products of various kinds and testing and so forth. And so there's this massive number, and there's really a very tiny number of witnesses, right, of vegans who are not participating in this consciously, who have consciously chosen to bring their lives into alignment with their values in such a way that we're not contributing to the violence, and choosing as best we can to minimize violence and to maximize kindness and love and caring. And so we're the ones really with the power in the situation. So that's what I said last night. We're the ones. We're the ones that are called for some reason from our own inner sensitivity being awakened to help in the situation. And so I think it's incumbent upon all of us to realize that there's no greater gift we can give to the world and really to ourselves as participants and part of the world, because we're all knitted into the fabric of our society, where none of us is separate. So to the degree that I'm benefiting and blessing the fabric of society by awakening my own awareness and consciousness and questioning the violence and doctrines and official stories and so forth of our society, then I'm giving just an enormous gift to the world, actually. And that comes back to myself in a variety of ways. It may not seem to, you know, a lot of people, that's one thing I think we have to talk about and understand more deeply, because unfortunately a lot of people who are vegan suffer terribly by knowing, and I understand this, you know, knowing the violence is happening and how no one cares about the violence. But I think one of the most important things we can do is to mature in our veganism to the point where we have an understanding that helps us to have a sense of inner peace. And I think it is possible. It's not the peace of becoming numb and dulling our sensitivity and not wanting to know. You know, that kind of peace that people think very often is peace. I'm just going to, you know, turn my back on all this and be happy somehow. I'm going to just ignore the suffering of others, ignore the suffering I'm causing others, and you go soak in a hot tub or something, and you know, or just eat something or drink something and try not to think about it. It's really the absolutely, in some ways, heroic willingness to open fully to the suffering and the pain of the world and hold it ourselves and see that besides all that suffering, which is happening through the basically the interconnectedness of activities that have been going on for decades and centuries. However, there's also an ever-flowing spring of beauty and joy and creativity and celebration that we can contribute to as well. So that by showing love and kindness to other living beings, we not only relieve their suffering, but we contribute to the joy and freedom here. And then at the, in the bigger picture, I wanted to say this last night, but I just felt it was a concept that may have been perhaps too, I don't know what the word for it is, maybe not really out there, but perhaps it would have taken too much time maybe to really develop it. But the basic idea that also I think it's important to have some kind of understanding that we're more than just merely a material thing that was born and will die, an object, like a piece of meat, like an animal. We see, we're taught in our society to see cows and pigs and chickens as mere physical things that we impregnate, you know, an animal and may give birth to a baby, and that baby is just here to be used and just a material thing, a piece of meat. And we're raised in a society, I think, that is materialistic philosophically and sees really in a very shallow way that everything is just matter. And so to deepen our awareness and realize that whatever happens, you know, we don't know what's going to happen to this planet right now. Global warming actually has gotten to the point where, Richard said it last night, and I've read too, we may very well be beyond the tipping point for human survival here. It's very possible, and not just human survival, but survival at all of species, most species. With now that the methane, and I mentioned this before, in the Arctic is really these positive feedback loops that have kicked in. So, but we don't know. We just don't know what, you know, we don't know. So, but what we do know actually is that we can do what we can to make the situation better, and that by doing that we can hopefully become worthy. That's how I see it anyway, as individuals and as a society, as a species, to be helped either by ourselves or somehow by the universe to heal the situation on this planet. We are attacking our Earth just with hideous violence right now, and it doesn't seem to be getting less. It seems to be getting worse in some ways, in terms at least of what governments, the U.S. government especially, is doing, although there is a lot of positive positive things happening in the world too, so I don't want to be overly negative here, but there is this sense, I think, at least on the surface level, that we continue, unfortunately, instead of using our precious resources to heal the wounds, to inflict more wounds. We have, you know, wars breaking out in many places caused by the empire, the capitalist empire that really uses animal agriculture as one of its major tools. And so I actually mentioned last month that I was reading a book, and I'm actually just finishing it up now, called Animal Oppression and Human Violence. And really, the author is a historian and sociologist who goes into this in extreme detail, and it's basically the chapter that I did in the World Peace Digest expanded out so you can see how it all works very clearly. But the basic idea is that that ranchers have always been enormously violent, not only against animals, but against other people. And to see really historically how these Genghis Khan, for example, traveled all over Asia and in Europe, this is one example, Attila the Hun, the Roman Empire, many others, and their ability to conquer and terrorize millions of people back then was due to the fact that they had dominated horses and cows, and so they would they brought cows with them as they went and ate and killed the cows and ate them, and then wherever they went, and this whole thing spread to the Americas and to Africa, and it was always at the expense of indigenous people, and in the earlier days, at the expense of people who were plant-based eaters. The people's gardens, they would trample their gardens, cut down their orchards, and force them to have servitude to them, and institute a more meat-based way of eating, that this whole thing spread, and it was always accompanied with a tremendous amount of violence, and it's still spreading throughout Africa. You can see it today in Africa. I mean, in Central, I mean, he really goes into what happens in Central and South America, and it was mentioned in the movie last night how over 1,000 people have been killed by ranchers for trying to defend the rainforest against ranchers who are keep cutting down the rainforest to graze cows and to grow soybeans. You know how they just, anyone who tries to get in the way, they do something brutal to them. So this is a force, and same thing that happened at the hands of the Indians here and the cowboys and that whole thing. So it's behind the whole thing has been huge industries, enormous wealth, those who have been running things really have the wealthiest of the wealthy who own the most land used that land to graze cows primarily. And so ranchers have been enormously and continue to be enormously powerful. If you go back in California, for example, the Spanish days, these gigantic haciendas where they owned thousands and thousands of acres of land, it was always running cows and killing the Indians and so forth for the wealth of the individuals involved, a tiny wealthy elite. And so it was interesting because in the movie last night, there was such a feeling I had as I was watching that the movie couldn't go into that, but sort of the underlying question was, why is it that the environmental groups are afraid to say anything about animal agriculture? Why is it that the governments are afraid to have any regulations of animal agriculture? Why is it that the American West has been trampled and destroyed by cows and sheep grazing, and no one stands up to it? And the water being we're in such a crisis of water now, and massive quantities of water are going to alfalfa and corn and soy to feed the animals, and no one questions it. What is it about animal agriculture that keeps everyone unable to even see what's happening, to even understand this? And historically, we see that the entire culture was built by the perpetrators of animal agriculture as a system of domination and exploitation, not only of the animals, but to control the governments and of the people, And it's still actually in place, and it forces onto the people, pretty much all the people, a certain mentality of fear, really, and of numbness and desensitization that comes in, really, when you're killing animals. In the movie yesterday, it was so interesting when there were some little pigs at one of these backyard farmers, and they were talking to the mother and father about the fact that these pigs were going to be killed in a few months. And there was a girl there who was 7 or 8 years old, and Kip asked her, he said, well, what do you think? You know, I mean, do you name them? And she said, no, I used to name them, but I don't name them anymore because then we kill them. And I don't want to name them because otherwise I feel too bad. You know, and so there was, this is the wound that the parents inflict on the children, and the children inflict it onto their children, and it goes down through the generations of just not looking at these beings as beings. And so this whole thing, though, is historically driven, and I think the beauty, really, in the whole thing is that it's not our true nature. It's the fact that people get traumatic stress disorder and so forth when they do harm to others shows that we have to consciously keep everything repressed. And what veganism is about, really, I think, is just letting go of all this repression and letting ourselves freely feel, letting ourselves freely think, letting ourselves freely use our minds and hearts and bodies in a way that brings joy to us and to others. It's really freedom. I just love that. So anyway, that's something that I guess all of that kind of came out from my experience with the on the lecture tour with the Buddhists and the movie last night and our time. I'm just going to wrap this up and get to here. We have a couple of people who have pressed R6, so I want to get to that. We were able to meet some just fabulous people. That's one of the best things about this, the hardworking people in Sacramento. They've got a really vibrant vegan community in Sacramento. We had over 100 people show up to, and that was funny. It was in a Buddhist center. Then the next night, Saturday night, it was in a Jewish synagogue with a vegan rabbi couple, a man and a woman, and they were just very gracious. It was an extremely wonderful event there. And then the next night, it was in Modesto. I gave a lecture at this place that was, an art gallery for people who have mental health issues, where they can be artists and create art, and their art is always accepted, and they put it on the walls, and people come in and buy it, basically. And it's a nonprofit started by this wonderful guy, and we spoke to her last year too in Modesto. So it was an event in a art gallery, all vegan food, and went really wonderfully well. And then the following evening, it was at a Unitarian church in Fresno. And of course, now we're in the middle of really heavy-duty dairy country in Fresno, and it was not a very big turnout. And the people there were kind of having a hard time, really, with the ideas of veganism. It's kind of rare for me to see this, but it was good. I think sometimes for me, working with Unitarians is wonderful. They tend to really try to be actively engaged in questioning things. But still, it's disturbing to see that almost like I was saying with the environmental groups and the Buddhist groups, you think, you know, the Unitarians, here are people who are really concerned with social justice, questioning everything, and it's the same thing. It's like, why is it so difficult for Unitarians to embrace this like it is for the Buddhists and the environmentalists? We hope that they're more likely to embrace it than the average person. They're more progressive, but still, it's quite plain to see from the turnout. There wasn't many people actually there, and but you know, some people were great. Actually, the ones who stayed. Some people actually just walked out because I think you know, I sometimes like push people's buttons with what I'm saying about animal agriculture. It's very rare that this happens, actually, but it happened a little bit there. But then we spent a couple of days in nature, which was just beautiful to be. It was kind of, it was interesting. We were at this, in the Sequoia National Park, for 2 nights, or National Forest, excuse me, National Forest, by camping by the Kern River, which is a really spectacular, beautiful river, and coming out of the mountains, out of the snow melt of Mount Whittier and up there. Still a lot of snow in the mountains. It was nice to see that. And we were the only ones there. There weren't fishermen. I mean, we were just surrounded by fishing people. And in fact, at one point, we had this guy, we were just having our breakfast, and this guy caught a fish. And, you know, I couldn't see it because it was behind a tree, but Madeline could see it easier. And she said, "I don't believe it. You just threw that fish into the weeds, into the bushes." And so I said, "Really? He's not going to eat it? He's not going to throw it back?" I shouldn't say it, you know, eat her and throw her back. So I went over and I said to the guy, there was a guy and then there was this other guy there too, and it was kind of funny because I said, so where's the fish? And this guy looked kind of sheepish and he said, "Well, we threw it into the bushes, you know." I said, "Why did you do that?" He said, "Well, it's because it's a sucker fish, you know, and these fish, they just eat the trout. And, you know, we like to eat the trout, so we don't like them. And so when we catch one of them, we don't throw them back. You know, I'll throw them here and let them die." And I said, that's terrible. I mean, you come out here, and these fish are living their lives, and you just take you think you have the right to take a pole and a hook and torture these animals and pull them out and kill them like that?" And then the guy I was talking to was not the fisherman. He was the guy with him. He was kind of helping him. And he said, "You're right, you're right." I was amazed when he said that. He said, "You're absolutely right." He said, "But, you know, this guy here, the fisherman, you know, he's a German. He likes to torture people." He said, I couldn't believe he said that. And the German guy didn't say anything to me. He didn't say a word the whole time. And so anyway, we kind of read him the riot act about the whole thing, and Madeline went over and talked, and I'm hoping we made an impression on them, but we just told them, you know, and the one guy was actually open to it. The others were sort of dyed-in-the-wool fishermen, and they really didn't want to hear it. But we're hoping, you know, we can plant seeds in these conversations with people that they begin to see that these animals are not things, and this is something really that I've seen actually many times over, that you know, the Canadians are killing seals because the seals are killing their fish, and the Japanese and the Americans too. And we fish all these different fishing operations. We think that they're our fish, so we kill whales and seals and dolphins because we think they're our fish. And it's like these people are killing this so-called sucker fishes because they were eating our fish. And but when we got to Las Vegas, it was a health, healing, happiness festival. I spoke at that a number of different events, and it was really great to see some of the World Peace Diet people there and be able to help spread the message there as well. So I know you all are working in your own spheres to do this, and I have a couple of people that have had their hand up to say something. We have, let's see, 804 area code, Mason, I think, are you there? Yeah, go ahead. I'm just unmuted your phone.
Good evening, Will, Madeline, all the world.
Oh, yeah, right. Hi, it's Grace. Hi, Grace.
Hey. Good evening. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to hear your voice. How are you doing?
I'm traveling. I'm on my way to D.C. I'm really excited about Alex's birthday party, but I'm much more excited about the potential of having a Cowspiracy screening in Charleston, South Carolina.
You're especially excited about Cowspiracy, and what did you say?
In Charleston, South Carolina, if we could maybe coordinate a screening in Charleston, that would be awesome.
Oh, great! Okay. Great. Yeah, send me an email, and I'm sure that they'll follow up on that. I mean, I would imagine they would. That'd be great.
Okay, excellent. Well, the Low Country Vegan Society is just recently formed. It's an umbrella organization for a lot of the different vegan advocacy and animal rights different disparate groups. It's very small groups in this part of the country, but some people working with, you know, anti-vivisection and vegan meetups and volunteering at the animal sanctuary near Columbia. And so there's a lot of people interested in working on behalf of the animals. So I've been part of this group. This is the Low Country Vegan Society. We're trying to pull together the nonprofit status and get everything organized. But I know that they are interested in doing some screenings, and there's a kind of an independent theater that they're interested in. But I was also curious if an actual theater isn't available, if maybe a library screening would be good. But I'll send you an email. The other, I wanted to thank you also for mentioning the victims and perpetrators and bystanders. That to me is a very, very powerful element in your book. And just a few nights ago, I was sharing that idea with a gentleman, and I could see the lights go on behind his eyes, like, you know, as he walked away, he's like, yeah, really, the bystander is the one with the power. And so that I think is a very, very effective and uplifting a component of this to share. But I was wondering, there's a group here in Charleston working to ban horse carriage rides in historic Charleston. It's very popular and all. And I was wondering what you think about kind of being involved in more of the sort of peripheral issues. Because, you know, my heart's in the World Peace Diet and being a vegan advocate. But I wonder if maybe contributing some time and energy to a horse carriage ban is a worthy goal and or what. I don't know. I'm sorry. What do you think, Will, please?
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Grace. And it's great to hear about you're working with the low country vegan group there. I would say as far as getting a ban on horse carriage, you know, it's terrible. I mean, these poor animals do suffer horribly in the horse carriage thing. I really don't like it at all. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with working on it somewhat. There's, you know, within the animal rights movement, people tend to think more and more that it's not a good idea to put too much energy into what are called single-issue campaigns. And this would be an example of that. You know, just let's ban horse carriages and have a victory. And, you know, we get that banned, and that would be great. And in a way, it's true. It is great. But what people say, and I can see, you know, from a strategic point of view, that you're not saying anything about the massive violence towards animals and food, which is really sort of the underlying problem, and that the most, you know, the best service, in a sense, we can give to really liberating all animals is to promote the message of compassion for all life and spread the vegan message. Because when people go vegan, then they see everything. They won't, you know, pay for a horse ride, of course, and those kinds of things. And to focus on that, and everything else will take care of itself. And that tends to be my position on it, too. I tend to feel that my energy is best spent on spreading the message of the World Peace Diet of veganism as a spiritual and cultural way of transformation. And, you know, these other things can tend to drain energy. I mean, it's up to you. I don't really want to ever say to someone that they shouldn't. If you really feel a calling in your heart for this, then, you know, go for it. I think it's, you know, I'm sure the horses would, if they do get free from this kind of slavery, it's good. You know, it helps everyone. You just have to kind of decide with your energy and time where you'd like to contribute it. Where do you feel most empowered and most alive. I think that's the most important thing.
Thank you, Will, so much. Thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome. Great to hear from you, Grace. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I wanted to actually hear a little bit from Lily. I know, Lily, you're on the line. And we had talked earlier today about your saying a few words for us about the World Peace Diet Sunday. Are you there?
I am, Will. I'm having I'm having technical difficulties with my dogs. For some reason, there's something down in the meadow that they are interested in, and they want it to leave. So I hope you don't hear too much barking. Can you hear me?
Okay, right now it sounds fine.
Okay, fine. I can't shut them up, you know. I could put a muzzle on them, but that wouldn't be very vegan, would it?
No.
I was just joking here. Yeah, you know, what you said about the rodeos and those kinds of things, I saw a photograph of we had rodeo days. Well, there are more cattle in my county, which is Humboldt County, than there are people. And I saw a photographs on the front page of last week's paper on the rodeo days, and the look on the rodeo man's, the cowboy's face was one of such aggression as he was roping this small, basically a small calf, and the baby was looking out very still, very, very beautiful, and the horse was looking like, do we have to do this? And the aggression on this man's face I started to cry when I saw it, and that's it's very hard on me. But what you talked about keeping your heart open, I wanted to share a letter that I received last week because I talk about the study group. The study group is a great tool of activism. It really is. I mean, people even come to one session. Today is the 8th month of doing this every single Sunday, 8 o'clock Eastern time, 5 o'clock Pacific time. It's the eighth month. It's exactly today. We started it on October 20th, and I've actually led every single session.
Wow.
And it's just been, it's actually been quite a phenomenon. But last week, see, I don't have email, and I'm going to probably wind up getting it one way or another here, but I got a snail mail letter, and this was from a woman that I only talked to in the doctor's office briefly, and actually I talked to her, and I said, I'd like to tell you about something, and we liked each other. I always make sure I get a heart connection with someone before I share anything with them, and I'm very sensitive, so I can feel it. And she gave me her home number. I invited her to come to the World Peace Diet Study Group. I warned her. We were reading Chapter 10, which absolutely is heart and gut-wrenching. It pulls your heart out of your chest and wrings it out. And I wound up realizing, since I'm the person that knows the book better than anyone on the study group, I think. I've read it 5 times, and I listen to the CD constantly, that I would read it because I knew that there needed to be quiet in between each portion of it, and it was read very much in a kind of a meditative state. I did a lot of meditation and prayer prior to getting on the call, so that I would be just an empty vessel for these words. Anyway, this is the letter that I got from this woman who is not a close friend at all, maybe will become one. Lily, dear, I was numb with shock and grief in hearing the realities that I learned, the atrocities inflicted upon our beloved spiritual teachers and guardians, the animals. Humans in their arrogance fail to recognize who the animals and all other living beings of the natural world really are. They are, in fact, evolved beyond that of man. And I have to just say that, I would say that, looking at that cowboy and looking at the serenity with which the calf was being dragged, he had a face of serenity. And he, in all circumstances, that's what we're always looking for in our lives. And I'm saying this. Now let me finish the letter. I can never feel the same about eating meat. And just a little aside, obviously she was not a vegan when she came to the World Peace Diet Study Group. Again, I have not realized the magnitude of the suffering the animals are going through. I went online after the conference call and was amazed after enjoying a viewing of Dr. Tuttle's lectures on YouTube. Such a beautiful soul of light, truth, and love. I was so impressed by his essence. I also continued on to learn more about the evolution pet food you spoke of. A spark of change has occurred within me, leading me into another direction. I am feeling a sense of liberation from my own limited, flawed attitude about our interconnectedness with all that is and that connection with what we eat. A real revelation. I am so ready for change. I had wanted to call you Sunday evening after the experience, but was so immersed mentally and emotionally by this awakening that I just needed to meditate. I have not been able to stop reflecting on it since. So that's the power of Dr. Tuttle's words. And in community, I mean, I could have told this woman, please read the World Peace Diet, and she probably would not have read it. Maybe she would. But this, she's going to order the book. I talked to her later. I told her I love the letter. I would like to share it with my group. She gave me permission. And she's been transformed. And I'm so grateful that I followed the calling within me to start this study group on the phone bridge so that I can use it as a tool of my own activism. But every person on this line can use it as well. And you can, it's a simple thing. It's 1 hour a week, but it's a very potent hour. And then people usually stay on for a good half hour to 45 minutes after, just talking about their ideas and what they've learned and sharing experiences and asking questions and getting some answers. And that's, I just wanted to tell you all, use it because it's a great way to encourage people to point them to the direction of the World Peace Diet. The World Peace Diet is the only reason I'm vegan today and have been for almost 8 years. It's the only reason. I got Dr. Tuttle's message into my heart. He did heart surgery on me with his words. And I've read other books, you know, John Robbins and all that before the World Peace Diet. It's very potent. And please come yourself and bring people to it. Not everyone's going to be happy with it. That's okay, you know. At least they're never going to forget that they came. And I don't worry about the result. I personally have a broken heart. So the only way I can live with myself is by doing something, and this is what I'm doing. People thank me for it, but I'm helping myself because my heart is broken over what is going on here. That's about it, and I will give the phone number and the PIN code. It's 712-432-3900. I'm going to repeat that, 712-432-3900, and the PIN code is 568-364-POUND, 568 364-POUND. Plug anyone into it. It's open to the world. And Madeline, on the first session, when Madeline came, she said, I would like to see hundreds of these study groups on the phone bridge. I would, too. And this is a free call for anyone who has long-distance service or free minutes on their cell phone, and they can plug into it wherever they are. People from all over the world are calling, and you know, Australia and even England in the middle of the night when they can't sleep and they know it's going on, they plug in. So it's a great tool. I'm grateful I'm able to do it. And as long as I have breath and as long as I can think clearly, I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep doing this study group. We're on chapter 10 now. We're down to the last five chapters of the World Peace Diet. And people are already asking me, well, are you going to start over? Are you going to start over? I think so. What else can we do?
That is so great, so inspiring. Thanks, Lily, for reading that letter and telling the story about the woman you met just really, in a sense, by chance in the doctor's office and how it touched her. And I think it's wonderful. I've been using it myself, telling people if it seems like the right kind of connection about the World Peace Eye Sunday. You can always tell people also, if you don't have the number right on the tip of your tongue, just say if they just go to worldpeacediet.org and click on tour schedule, it's right at the top of the page. World Peace Diet Sunday every week at 6 p.m. Pacific, at 5 p.m. Pacific. And the number and the code is right there, too, so they can find it online. All right. Well, thanks so much, Lily. It's good. I wanted to say, it just came to me when you were talking this morning, actually, I was in getting a little repair done on our old Volkswagen bus, and there was a quote on the wall by Ralph Waldo Emerson, what is success? And it was a beautiful poster, actually, but it kind of touched me when hearing you speak and hearing this woman write. I won't read the whole thing, but he says, what is success? To laugh often and much, and very few different things, but he says, to find the best in others, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition. To know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. That is to have succeeded. I'm almost crying saying that, but
beautiful.
I think it's so beautiful, to remember.
There's a
that.
Jewish tradition, Will. There's a Jewish tradition. If you save one life, you save the world. So
right.
We're saving a lot of lives. We're saving a lot of lives by going vegan. And it's such an honor. I never thought that my life would mean so much. And now I'm better care of myself than I ever have, because I feel my life is worth something today, aside from all the personal things that I've done and in my personal pursuits. Living the impersonal life is an amazing adventure. And I know Grace can say that too, because I know that's how she is. Living the impersonal life frees you up to be who you really are, and to speak for those who have no voice. What better thing can you do? And they have a voice,
right,
but they don't speak our language. But they do if we have the heart to hear it. So
right,
that's what we're doing, one person at a time doing. That's what we're doing. And it's such an honor to be involved with you, Will, and your circle of compassion. I thank God for it every day.
Well, thanks so much, Lily. We really appreciate your efforts so much and your presence with us. And thanks so much. And we only have a few minutes. I'm going to go ahead and mute your phone. We have two more people that have asked who have raised their hands. One, I think, again, we only have a few minutes, but Michael, you had pressed *6, I think, at one point. Do you have something you'd like to ask or share?
Hi, Will. Michael Roth.
Hi, Michael. Yeah.
Gary Francione had the same issue with the Jain community. He thought that this was a community completely dedicated to peace and love and nonviolence and ahimsa, and yet they eat dairy.
Right, right.
And I had spoken to one of the leaders in the Cherry Hill, New Jersey community, and he said, well, you know, Gary just has to understand that he's very strident in his opinion, but mountains get moved very slowly.
Right, right.
It had to do with what you were talking about.
I know. Yeah, Gary and I both at the same time have been at a couple of Jain conferences together promoting veganism, and so I've worked, you know, sort of shoulder to shoulder with him on that, and I think we've made some, you know, good progress actually there. But you know, like this fellow said, this is the Jains really pride themselves in being a 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 year old tradition that has ahimsa at its core, and they don't really give a reason, they just don't want to change. But some of them do. You know, it's great to see a lot of the older Jains are going vegan, and a lot of the younger Jains are actually going vegan. And so I'm part of the online group called Jain Vegans, and we're sharing ideas all the time.
Oh,
so there is a,
so
definitely a movement.
JainVegan.com?
Pardon me?
At JainVegan.com?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's, I think, the website. And the group is just a Yahoo chat group.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
But, yeah, great. And I'm planning on speaking, actually, in northern New Jersey two different times in August.
We're seeing
you. So
it.
I'm planning
we're
that.
Planning on that.
See you, hopefully.
Yeah, we're planning to see you in Neptune, New Jersey, at the Unitarian Church. And,
oh, great. Yeah, Unity Church. Yeah, good.
Is it Unity or Unitarian?
It's Unity.
Oh,
and
Unity.
And I'll get the other venues up on the website before too long also when we get them.
Teresa and I are planning Sunday. We've never been to the Unity Church in Cherry Hill, but we thought of trying to tie you down to what your schedule looks like. And there is a Unitarian church in Galloway. There's a Unitarian church in Cherry Hill.
Uh-huh.
And then there's Unity in Cherry Hill. So Teresa and I just completed a 6-year litigation, and it ended with the last of the arguments and the rebuttals, and so it's done. So we now can focus a little bit on Sundays and building some community with those three churches and see if we can't augment your stay down in New Jersey.
Okay, well, great. I'll
stay in touch with you.
Can be in touch by email about that, maybe even by phone. Okay.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Okay, I think we have time. Maybe there's one more person who wanted to be in touch. It was great to hear your voice, Michael. And Veronique, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Will. So good to talk to you again. There were several things I wanted to comment on. First of all, great call. I'm so happy you talked about Cowspiracy, because this is a movie I've been waiting for literally for years, with a message that I'm hoping will shake the environmental movement into doing the right thing at last.
Right.
Before I was vegan, I was actually into the animal rights, the environmental movement. And once I made the connection between animal agriculture and the environment, it became clear, because I was waiting to see if they were going to react to the UN report. But as time went by, it became clear that they were not at all going to talk about it. And then I started finding out that they were more or less all in bed with big oil and big industry. And
right.
So I made the decision at that point that I was not going to give my money to this organization anymore unless they start promoting veganism, which obviously they're not going to do. And I felt very disillusioned with the environmental movement, and I figured that the only people who really understand all those connections are actually vegans. And becoming vegan really connected all those dots for me. But I am so happy about this movie, so happy, because I'm really hoping it's going to shake up things and make people aware of the connection between the industry and the environment. So that's
right.
The first comment I was going to make. The second comment, and by the way, I have my ticket for June 26th for the early premiere, so I can't.
Oh, good.
The second comment I was going to make, you mentioned vegans and you mentioned single issue campaigns and all those things, and I got to the point where I'm really drifting away from what I would call the protest-type vegans, because, first of all, they are, for the most part, violently, I would say, anti-spiritual, and a lot of them are atheists. And I'm not against being an atheist, but I used to be one, after all. But there is, for me, so much violence in their heart that it's actually hurting me. And I had to really step back and rethink and sort of refocus. And it really comes down to me to really get involved with the work inside community more than anything else, because I believe this is where the real connections are made and the real understanding is. The most of the activists that I know in LA and are highly dedicated, but they are missing the bigger picture, and they are focusing on things which to me are a waste of energy when they could focus on what you called, when you said earlier, the root causes, which is what we put in our bodies.
Right.
And that it's I find it very sad that most activists don't realize that they need to focus on veganism. And for that, I agree with you and Gary Francione, for that matter, on the fact that veganism is what he calls the moral baseline, and that if we don't promote veganism, we can march all day long to close slaughterhouses, but it's not going to do a thing. So there was, for instance, a big march in various cities of the world, including L.A., to close slaughterhouses, and I was going to go, and then at the last minute I thought, no, to me this is a waste of my energy, this is not how I want to go about it, and it didn't make any sense to me anymore, because it's missing the most important factor, which is we should be promoting veganism. And one of the things
right.
I found out, which actually confirmed my decision in a way, is Bob Linden posted something about the message of the march, in which they were not even going to mention veganism. They were just going to tell people we don't want people to eat meat, and that's it. And obviously, it's a good thing to say that, but it is not a clear message, in my opinion, that we have to really promote peace and inclusion. And instead, we have people out there on the streets who are angry and yelling at people. And I don't think this is the right message. This is not a message that is appealing to non-vegans. And this is a message that makes us look like a lot of non-vegans would say, like freaks. And so I really had to step back. And also because it felt very violent. I felt very, it hurt me. Yeah, I actually
right.
had, it really stressed me out. And I thought, no, I don't want to do this. Instead, what I did is, and it felt like I had to do it, was when I went to San Francisco a few weeks ago for National Animal Rights Day, I was with two friends, and we stopped, and I hope no animal industry person is spying on us right now. We stopped by on the I-5 where they have all those feedlots. And before I left for San Francisco, I bought extra lenses, camera lenses, with the intention of taking pictures of better quality than I ever did before. And we went into the feedlots and we took pictures of what is going on in those feedlots. And by stroke of luck, so to speak, not that it's lucky for the animal, we found and I took pictures of a baby calf that was literally stillborn and left there on the on the dirt road inside the feedlot to just rot. It was really distressing to watch. And I just felt compelled to take pictures of this and take pictures of everything I could. And we literally left very quickly, as you can imagine, the area after that. But I don't know. I think it turned out to me to be more useful to show people what's going on and be a witness than going out there and yelling at people and make a fuss and look like crazies for people who don't understand how we're thinking. And when I posted those pictures on Facebook, that picture of that baby went viral, I mean, literally viral, and I hope it did reach people who are not into the movement and they have no idea what's going on. And hopefully made them think. And my intention was not to scare people or shoot something ugly, but it happened that day we were witness of this and found this.
Right.
Baby. And obviously, I was not going to turn my back and not take a picture. I had to. So that was what I felt was the most important thing I did recently. And but anyway, the third thing I was going to mention is that I listened to what you said about doing a database for Work Peace Life Facilitator, and I think it's an awesome idea. Unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to help because I'm literally leaving the country mid-July. I'm moving back to France. Yeah, and my big regret is I'm going to miss the World Summit you're going to do with Bob Linden next year, and I think Gary Francione. I would have loved to go there, and I'm going to have to settle for the by going to the animal rights or so-called animal rights conference in LA on the 10th. I'm only going because a few speakers I found there are a few speakers that I like, but yeah, I would have loved to be able to go to the World Summit. This, just like the movie and just like your book, this is another thing I've been waiting for years, is to see an actual summit that really talks about what we've been discussing all this time, which is promoting veganism and really stop focusing on single-issue campaigns and waste our energy this way. And this is the summit I've been waiting for forever, and I'm going to miss it, unfortunately. So I'm hoping there will be recordings. Do you know anything about that?
Right, yeah. I think I'm sure there'll be recordings of the of the presentations and things, Veronica. And I'm sorry to hear that you'll be leaving L.A. in Southern California, but I'm glad to hear that you'll be in France, and maybe next summer we're going to be actually doing a lecture tour next summer in Europe and going to Germany and Italy and Switzerland, and we can maybe we can even include France. I don't know. We'll have to see. But I'm actually going to have to stop here because it's been an hour and a half, and I kind of promise everybody we won't go longer than an hour and a half. So, is that okay? I think I need to kind of wrap it up. But it's great to hear your comments and your thoughts about these things. So thanks so much.
You.
Yeah, great. Thanks so much, Veronica. Wow, beautiful. And yeah, I think it's so true that very often, I mean, I think there's a much more powerful work we can do as animal rights activists or as advocates for veganism to help bring the vegan message to people. And I just encourage everyone to think deeply about all these different things we've been talking about this evening and the different approaches that are available to us. You know, we all have our unique strengths and gifts, and our movement really, I think, benefits from all of us tapping into that and being able to bring those not only out for our own benefit. I think it, like Lily said, you know, we just feel so much happier and so much more, have a sense of meaning in our lives and more alive, really, when we are living the truth that we are, but it also encourages other people to do the same thing. So just in closing, and we're just wrapping it up here now, so I just encourage everyone to have a look, if you already haven't already, at the June 2014 resources for the World Peace Diet Circle. I've got a lot of, I think, great things there that came in the last month. The quote at the beginning, I think, kind of sums it up, by Edward Sanchez. He says, "Once you come to terms with why you don't eat cats, dogs, monkeys, and dolphins, you begin to understand why I don't eat cows, pigs, chickens, and lambs." And I think that's a wonderful quote. And then there's a few things here just to mention. Madeline and I actually were very kind of happy. It was kind of fun to see that we were on the cover of a magazine, the Vegan New Zealand magazine. We have a PDF link there of an interview, an article, and photographs, and everything else. Two really good interviews on YouTube over the last month, one with Jason Liasatos from England. He's from Greece, but he's great. You know, he's a great interviewer, I think, actually. And the other with Debo Zarco from Vancouver, one of the islands there, who's written a new book called Unplug, and she's featuring the World Peace Diet and me in the book, along with some other people. But we had a wonderful interview. She's very spiritually oriented and very aware. So is Jason, actually. So I highly recommend, if you have a chance, to watch the video. And I think the other one is an audio with Deb. And then some great articles, one, you know, from some of our people, Judy Carmen, Veronique, also her photograph, I've got a link to that that she was just talking about. Susie Cameron, the wife of director James Cameron, has started the apparently the first explicitly vegan school in the United States. And so I think that's it's about time we had one. We should have more than one. But anyway, she's on the basis of compassion and environmental sustainability. And then there's quite a few other very interesting articles that have come out over the last month that are a good video on honey and veganism also. So please have a look at those, and you can tell people, if you know anyone who's on the World Peace Diet Circle, that we have, of course, the recording of this will be going up a little later today. And so we look forward to everyone to being with you all again in July. And the third Thursday of July will be the next call we'll have together, and that will be July 17th. And in the meantime, if you happen to be in the Denver area, we'll be I'll be flying there in 2 weeks. Madeline flies to Switzerland, and I fly to Denver July 4th. And July 5th and 6th is the VegFest Colorado. So that should be great. And also, if you're interested in spreading the word on this, there's a large internet event put on by the Shift Network, which is probably one of the largest internet purveyors of these large conferences. And it's called the Summer of Peace. There's 70 experts on peace who are being interviewed by Philip Helmich, who's the director of peace for the Shift Network. And some of them are well-known, people like Archbishop Desmond Tutu and Eckhart Tolle and Barbara Marx Hubbard and Daniel Ellsberg. I really think some of they are great people, and some of them are less well-known. I think I am, as far as I can tell, the only out of 70, the only professed vegan. The one that really, but they're allowing me, in fact, totally allowing me to bring the vegan message to this whole supposedly peace-oriented summit. And, of course, from my point of view, if they're not talking about veganism, then it's not really talking about peace. But anyway, I wrote an article about it, and they published it and it went out to hundreds of thousands of people on their network. So that's a good thing, I think, to bring this message. And so I'll just close with just thanking you all for joining us for this call. I really love that everything that was said, and that remembering that quote by Emerson, that even as Lily said, if we just benefit one person, save one life, or help influence someone in a positive way, our life has meaning. And I think all of you are such shining examples of kind and caring people doing work that really needs to be done here in this short time that we're on this earth. Thanks from my heart for your dedication to the cause. I know Madeline sends her love as well. Feel free to stay in touch with us during the upcoming several weeks until our next call in July. And know that we are making progress, and that everything that we do does make a difference in the bigger picture. So much love to you all. Thank you again for joining us for this World Peace Diet Circle call, and we look forward to the next one, and to hopefully seeing you before too long. Much love. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.